Right now, we're going to look at some things that have literally supported us for almost as long as we can remember. Chairs. You might not think there's a lot to say about the humble seat, but our next guest says chairs are a unique combination of fashion and function.
Looking at everything from the classic Chippendale wing chair to the plastic monoblock, our guest's new book looks at the design, history, and cultural significance of chairs. Witold Rybczynski joins us now. He's a writer and emeritus professor of architecture at the University of Pennsylvania. His new book is called Now I Sit Me Down, From Klismos to Plastic Chair, A Natural History. Witold, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
Well, early on, you write that a chair can be a living link to the past, even the distant past. So what's the case for that? How can we actually experience history through this seemingly mundane object that we sit on?
Well, most of your listeners would have sat in a Windsor chair at some point, and they would have sat in a chair that's virtually identical to the chair that the Founding Fathers sat on when they signed the Declaration of Independence, except for George, who sat on a fancier chair because he was a sort of head of that meeting. But so it's the same chair. There's nothing else that we use from 1776 in our daily lives, and yet we do sit in those chairs, and they're wonderful chairs, and they're comfortable, and they're functional. So we keep making them. We don't sit in an antique, of course. We sit in a chair that was probably made a few years ago.
But you write that, the high-tech phone we have, a miracle of design, may be obsolete in 1 year. What is it about chairs that's so special that a design from 300 years ago, or even in some cases you write thousands of years ago, we can still sit on something like that and it's still a recognizable chair to us?
I think it's partly because making a good chair is very complicated. And so when you do it and when you achieve it, it lasts a long time. People recognize that it's valuable, and they keep it. They keep using it. And the other thing, of course, is that the human body doesn't change. And as long as you're sitting at a table writing a letter, whether you're writing it with a quill pen or on an iPad, you're still writing, and you can use the same sort of chair.
Have chairs changed a lot over the centuries, what we think of as a chair today? If we looked at one that was hundreds of years old, would we recognize it?
Well, the answer is actually yes and no. Most people will have sat on one of those little camping stools, with a little X-frame and a piece of canvas or nylon on the top. And those were invented in ancient Egypt. So if you were transported into ancient Egypt, you would recognize that chair because it would be very familiar. On the other hand, the Egyptians sat on the ground. The Greeks and the Romans ate on couches rather than sitting in chairs. So there have been some really big changes. In the Middle Ages, there were very few chairs, and most people didn't have chairs at home. And maybe they had a bench, maybe a stool, but that was about it. So there have been a lot of changes, but there are ancient chairs that are completely familiar to us.
And you write that there's nothing inevitable about us having chairs. A lot of societies have done without them. Can you tell the story you found the significant of how China switched from a sit-on-the-floor or stand culture to a chair culture?
Sure. I devoted a whole chapter to that because it's such an unusual story. China is the only culture that we know of that started off as a floor-sitting culture, like Japan, like many people still do in the Middle East and India and Africa, and then invented the chair quite independently of anything that was going on in Europe. And this was about 1000 AD, so it was the beginning of the Middle Ages in Europe, so they didn't copy anybody. They came up with a chair, and then they switched very quickly and completely abandoned floor sitting and adopted chairs, fancy chairs for the emperor, but also very ordinary chairs for the man in the street. So it was a very dynamic society that shifted from one thing to the other in a relatively short period of time. Their neighbors in Japan didn't do that at all. They remained a floor-sitting culture, even though they were very aware of chairs. It wasn't that they were ignorant. They just were not interested in chairs. They liked sitting on mats and sleeping on the ground, and it was a different culture, and they adopted chairs eventually, primarily because of Western influence, although most Japanese homes still have a special traditional room which doesn't have furniture in it.
Did that transition from floor sitting to chair sitting influence the culture or the politics at all? Because I can imagine, you know, with chairs, you have a lot of potential for people to be elevated over other people based on their chair height.
That's true. It actually affects many things. For example, in China, if you're going to sit on the ground with your...
We've lost Vitold Rymchinsky for a moment. I will remind you that Vitold Rymchinsky is an emeritus professor of architecture at the University of Pennsylvania. We're talking about his new book. It's called Now I Sit Me Down, From Klismos to Plastic Chair, A Natural History. And he tries to look at the humble chair, how it's changed and not changed over time, and what it tells us about ourselves, our physiology, our culture, hierarchies in society. We'll hopefully get to in just a couple moments.
And we've been lots of interesting things in the book we'll get to once we get our guests back, including certain chairs perhaps contributing to the development of reading. Certain chairs were just comfier to read a book in and then maybe developed side by side with a reading culture.
And I've learned the word klismos, which I did not know until this book.
It's an
ancient Greek stool. Yeah, it's an ancient Greek word for the kind of stool they used. And again, it looks like some chairs. He says he uses a klismos-type chair today for some of the work he does. Still trying to get Vitold Rybczynski back on the air. Sounded like his phone line was dying on us there.
And Rob, do you have any particular aesthetic attachment to any chairs in your life?
I don't. You know, I'm not really an aesthetic kind of guy. And here at Public Radio, I don't remember that old chair I had, the sort of gold LeMay-y looking chair. It was falling apart. The armrest was wrapped up with duct tape, so I didn't keep pinching my arm in it. It broke multiple times. One of our guys in the shop kept pirating parts for it because I loved that chair. It was just ugly. Ugly chair.
Was it comfortable?
It was really comfortable. And that's, I got that kind of attachment. I'm kind of more of a function over form guy. Looks like we have Vitold Rybczynski back with us. And Vitold, wanted to ask you about chairs and hierarchy in society. Medieval Europe, Renaissance Europe, if you're a chair designer, you're going for the money, you're designing the fancy chair. Things were different, you say, for the American chair designers. Can you talk about that?
The big difference was that there were very few chairs in medieval Europe, and they were expensive. They were reserved for important people. In America, you get you don't have as many fancy chairs as Europe, but you have, in a sense, democratic chairs. So the Windsor chair was very popular in America because it could be made out of all kinds of wood, and it could be made by different people who are not necessarily extremely skilled craftsmen. And in England, the Windsor chair was strictly an outdoor chair. It was like a lawn furniture. Whereas in America, it was a chair that you had in your house. Even if you were, say, George Washington, he had about 20 Windsor chairs in his home. So it was a different approach to chairs, partly because of circumstances. We didn't have industry. We didn't have a tradition of woodworking and guilds and all of the things that they had in Europe. So we were forced to be more inventive. We also invented the rocking chair, which was strictly an American invention. It was not something that came from Europe. And it, as in China, when a new thing came along, it was adopted very quickly, and rocking chairs became extremely popular very quickly and were used by people all over the country. Every home had at least one rocking chair in it. And I'm talking now of colonial and just after colonial times.
Could you tell us a little bit briefly now about the tie between comfortable chairs and reading culture?
Yes. I mean, reading is an unusual activity because it's, for one thing, it's solitary. It doesn't involve a group. It tends to happen sitting down, and it takes a lot of time, particularly if you're reading a novel, if you're reading for recreation. And so you get a kind of parallel between very comfortable chairs, like wing chairs, which are upholstered and and cozy, and you can sort of curl up in them and read a book in them. It isn't a simple sort of one thing follows the other, but there's a definite parallel between, say, the 18th century, when novels start becoming popular, and then the growth of chairs, which allow you to sit in a position that's comfortable for long periods of time.
And Vitold, very briefly, as we come up to the news, a favorite chair. If you could only have one chair in your life, what would it be?
It's hard to say one chair. And my favorite chair, because I use it for reading, is a wing chair. And I think it's the chair, but it's also it's the place where I read books, so it's a kind of a pleasant place for me when I have a time and I want to sit down and relax and read a book and kind of wander off into whatever the book is about. The chair is the place where that happens. So for me, that's definitely the chair that I would consider one of my favorites in the home.
Vitold, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Vitold Rybczynski, writer, emeritus professor of architecture at the University of Pennsylvania. We've been talking about his new book, Now I Sit Me Down, From Klismos to Plastic Chair, A Natural History.
Coming up after the news, it's Food Friday, and we'll learn about the cuisine of the Appalachian region. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.